Moncrief on News Talk.
Now, to construct any building requires energy, but the form of that energy has changed over the millennia that humans have built things. Hundreds of years ago, it was simple human exertion, but many of Ireland's Edwardian buildings, for instance, exist because of coal. Barnabas Calder is author of Architecture from Prehistory to Climate Emergency, and he joins us now in News Talk. Barnabas, good afternoon to you.
Hello.
Could you start by telling us how long have architects existed for?
That's a good question. I mean, people have been designing buildings for at least 14,000 years, but at the beginning of that time, they were hunter-gatherer societies where the same people were experts in everything. So you had to be good at hunting, you had to be good at cooking, you had to be good at obstetrics, you had to be good at architecture. All of it was part of your year-to-year life as a hunter-gatherer. And specialization grew and grew as energy levels grew from the origins of farming. So you start to get specialist stonemasons and specialists who are producing buildings as their main activity from about 12,000 years ago.
Okay, and from are there references to specific people whose job it was who might have built the pyramids or whatever?
Not by the time of the pyramids, you start to get the beginnings of an idea of who the most significant of the engineers or masons or whatever you want to call them were. Administrators, I suppose, in a way, because it's a big organizational project. But the great birth of names for architects is much later than that. You start to get the kind of architect as a brand from the Italian Renaissance in Western context. Before that and around most of the world, the tendency previously was for the person paying for it to be the one you regarded as the one who was responsible for the building. Right. So Roman emperors put their name on the building, not that of the, from their point of view, functionary who made it happen. They were the ones who provided the labor. They were the ones who provided the money. They want the credit for it. Very much like a website now. You don't know the names of the website designers of your favorite websites, even though you know what a good one is and what a good one isn't.
Yes, indeed. I suppose so. So I suppose that prior to the Renaissance, an architect was really more regarded as an engineer rather than the creative force behind it. But even at that, one imagines, when they were planning out some grand building, they had to calculate how much they needed in raw material and how much they needed in people to make it work.
Yes, absolutely. I think if you think of one of the simplest examples of a big project to plan might be the pyramids of ancient Egypt. And if you look at those, once you've set out the base of it, you've kind of decided how much material is going to go into it because the shape makes it extremely obvious if, as in one case of all those pyramids, one of them changes slope some other way up because they realize they weren't going to put the amount of effort into it they'd originally planned. So it's an extraordinarily confident move, isn't it, to start a pyramid that's of a size that, like the biggest of them all, is going to require 5 million tons of stone to be moved. That's you committing yourself to tens of thousands of workers working away at it over tens of years, at least a decade. With that project is that the most powerful human being on the planet at the time who commissioned that kind of scale of project was only capable of a building where if you take the amount of energy of all that labor of 20,000 or so laborers for 10 years, it's only the equivalent of seven contemporary US citizens' lifetime energy use, because we now use so much energy through our fossil fuel use, which is truly terrifying as a reminder of how much things have changed over the last three centuries with the arrival of fossil fuel.
But that labor, would that have been slave labor, essentially?
No, not in Egypt. It's very hard to get any sense because the few bits of documentation that survive of these kinds of projects are from the point of view of the organizers and from the point of view of the people commissioning them. You don't get the laborer's voice about what it was like to be involved in it, but they do seem to have been paid. They were certainly fed, and there's no particular evidence with those projects whether it was something that you were called up for, like military service and that you dreaded, or whether actually you were fed better than you would have been fed at home and it was quite a good job and you were pleased to have it. It's very unclear what the exact situation was. In a way, in energy terms, the experience of the human beings involved in it is completely untraceable a lot of the time. What you get is a sense of how many people are involved, but some of them may have been having really quite a gratifying and artistically fulfilling time, and others were in absolute hell. We know that Egyptian granite quarries were nightmarish to work in, and that even though your family was punished if you ran away from working in a granite quarry, there were still extensive cases in the law courts of people who did run away.
Okay, maybe understandably at the same time. Now, to skip forward 1,000 years or so, I did mention in the introduction there about coal having a role to play. And this is connected, as I understand it, with the humble red brick.
Yes, absolutely. There's nothing humble about the humble red brick. It's a wonderful material and it's very fireproof. It's resistant to vermin. The buildings in areas without good building stone before, so cities like London, which are built on clay, were pretty vile in medieval conditions. Essentially, we're living in a kind of bonfire and rat's nest where everything, that fires were so standard in medieval cities that people drew up property contracts saying, this is the border between our properties until the next fire, and then we'll straighten it out and make it more rational, because they knew that it was only a matter of time till all the properties burnt down again. That's very hard to imagine your way back into from the last three centuries of having increasing amounts of these good quality bricks. And brick is very simple. It's mostly clay with some straw and sand in it, just heated up to make it not re-dissolve at the first rainfall, which obviously in Britain and Ireland is a pretty important criterion. The brick is a really, really good thing, but it's very energy hungry. So until there's cheap coal, you build with wood instead, rather than burning lots more wood in order to produce bricks. And as soon as there's cheap coal, bricks become an amazingly good building material and very scalable, that you can have lots and lots of brickworks around a fast-growing town, and cities can grow faster than they'd ever grown before.
Though at the same time, from what you've said, the carbon footprint of each particular construction is just getting bigger and bigger.
Yes, absolutely. There's from the 17th century in England on, which is one of the first really big booms of fossil fuels, you start to see the carbon footprint coming into existence, really, because buildings before that were built with minimum heat inputs. The great monuments of Rome, for example, typically have only 6% or less of their ingredients requiring heat. Whereas a contemporary building, it's almost 100%. Almost everything that goes into most of our buildings now is produced via intense coal, oil, and gas heat, which are threatening our survival thanks to the fossil fuel carbon emissions that they produce. So when you start to have coal, you start to have dirty cities is the first sign of it. And people complain about the blackening of new buildings, about the quality of air and the difficulty they increasingly had breathing in the bigger cities as they became coal-fired, because coal fumes are much nastier than wood smoke. But that only increases over the following centuries. And whilst it's much less visible in its current form, our current fossil fuel use for buildings is the heaviest it's ever been and still rising. It's about 40% of the world's fossil fuel greenhouse gas emissions are produced by building and running buildings.
My word. Barnabas, thanks very much for speaking with us today. That was Barnabas Calder there. He's a senior lecturer in architecture at the University of Liverpool and the author of Architecture from Prehistory to Climate Emergency.
Moncrief on News Talk.